state, local governments, and territories on the Clean Power Plan supplemental proposal. So we're going to start here with Lauren Peterson, who's going to run us through some of the logistics, and then we're going to hand it over to Janet McCabe, the Acting Assistant Administrator for the Office of Air and Radiation, and then next we'll hear from Melanie King from EPA's Office of Air Quality Planning and Standards. So with that, Lauren, if you want to cover the logistics and get started.
Sure. On your screen is an example of how you can participate in today's webinar. The first thing you'll notice is this orange arrow, and this will expand and collapse the GoToWebinar console. The most important thing is the question box here, and this is where you can enter questions. We'll be compiling these questions and asking them during the question and answer session at the end of the webinar. You'll be on mute, so this is essential in knowing how to enter the question here, and then click on the send to send your question to us. Audio is available by telephone and via your computer, and if you have any technical difficulties during the webinar, please feel free to contact me at the email address located there on the screen. And Janet, back to you.
Great. Thank you very much, Lauren. Thank you, Julia. And thanks to everybody who's joined us. It looks like we have 61 lines open, so that's great. We may have some more people joining in, so thanks. I'm pleased to be here with you today for another installment in our efforts to engage everybody on issues related to the draft proposed Clean Power Plan. In doing so, we are continuing to follow through on President Obama's directive to us to engage extensively with the broadest possible range of perspectives as we work to develop a plan that will cut energy waste, strengthen the economy, leverage cleaner energy sources, and reduce harmful emissions of carbon. Today we want to provide you with more details about the supplemental proposal that we issued last week. It addresses carbon pollution from affected power plants in Indian country and in U.S. territories. We believe that public input is one of the most important parts of the rulemaking process, and the more we listen and engage, the more perspectives we hear, the better the Clean Power Plan and all of our work will be, and the more successful we will be. So at every stage of the process, we have prioritized outreach to the public, to tribes, to state, industry, non-governmental organizations, labor organizations, and many other groups that are interested. We've had many meetings, conference calls, public hearings, and we've got nearly 1.5 million public comments already, and they have identified a wide range of ideas and information and opinions about the proposal. Our actions today, we're trying to reflect what we've heard, and we've benefited greatly from all of this engagement. This is exactly how the rulemaking process is intended to work. And in having these calls and these continued engagements, I hope you understand that we are definitely listening and want to continue all of these opportunities to get your feedback. So let me just provide a few details about the supplemental proposal before I turn it over to Melanie. As I said, it addresses carbon pollution from affected facilities in Indian country and U.S. territories. When we proposed the Clean Power Plan back in June, we noted that we would be taking this step. And like the proposal that came out in June, this proposal sets area-specific goals for Indian country and for territories and provides options for meeting those goals in a flexible manner that accommodates a diverse range of approaches. The proposed goals are based on information and data provided to us through additional outreach to covered facilities and to tribal and territorial governments. In addition, we have held consultations with all three of the tribes that have affected power plants on their lands, as well as other tribes that have requested consultation, and we expect those opportunities to continue into the future. For Indian country, we are proposing goals for 4 affected power plants, the Navajo Generating Station and the Four Corners power plants within the Navajo Nation, the Bonanza power plant located on the lands of the Ute tribe of the Uinta and Uri Reservation, and the Fort Mojave Tribe South Point Energy Center. The supplemental proposal also addresses 6 affected sources in Puerto Rico and 2 affected sources in Guam. We have a comment period that closes on December 19th, and we will hold a public hearing on the proposal on November 19th in Phoenix, Arizona. As I mentioned, we have already engaged in consultation with several tribes, and we are looking for additional opportunities to consult as requested by the tribes. As we began our work on the Clean Power Plan, we started by listening hard and listening often, and we will continue to do that. This is not an unusual occurrence to have a supplemental proposal, especially in a situation where we needed to gather some additional information. We think that having this call today to make sure that you have some basic information about it is a good first step. And we certainly will want to know what other information we can provide to you during the comment period. We're confident that the end result will be a final clean power plan that will help accomplish the President's goals to cut harmful carbon pollution, which is fueling climate change, which is affecting our communities all across this country as well as throughout the world. It will help us build a nation that is investing and becoming resilient to deal with these impacts, and also importantly to lead the world by taking action here at home in the global climate fight. We believe that this program allows the communities across the country and the businesses across the country to accomplish these goals in a way that will strengthen our economy and create new jobs and positive investment in our communities. So, with that, I will turn it over to Melanie King, who will go into more detail about the proposal, and then we will have time for your questions. Go ahead, Melanie.
Okay, thanks, Shannon, and thanks everyone for joining on the webinar today. Let's see, we'll get our slides. Get our slides going here. Okay, sorry. So our agenda for today is to talk about some background on the supplemental proposal, why we're proposing the Clean Power Plan, what units are affected by the supplemental, and how EPA determined the best system of emission reduction, the guidelines for implementation plans, the impacts of the supplemental proposal, and then the process for public input. So just to give you some background on the supplemental proposal, it's being proposed under Clean Air Act Section 111D. We issued it on October 28th, and it was published yesterday in the Federal Register. What the supplemental proposal does is propose emission guidelines for U.S. territories and areas of Indian country to follow to develop plans to address emissions of greenhouse gases from existing fossil fuel-fired electric generating units, or EGUs. The two main elements of the supplemental proposal: the first is rate-based goals for carbon dioxide emissions from the power sector for each area of Indian country and U.S. territory with affected EGUs. And then the second element is guidelines for these areas to follow in developing plans to achieve these area-specific goals. The supplemental proposal relies on the approach used in the June 2014 Clean Power Plan proposal, which established the goals and the guidelines for states. So we, to the extent possible, use that same approach that's laid out in the June proposal in establishing the goals and the guidelines for Indian country and U.S. territories. The next slide. Again, having slide difficulties here. The next slide lays out some of the reasons why we are proposing the Clean Power Plan. CO2 is a potent greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change, and it accounts for nearly 75% of global greenhouse gas emissions and 82% of greenhouse gas emissions across the country. Greenhouse gas pollution is causing many rapid and long-lasting changes in our climate that can have a range of severe negative effects. And some of those are already manifesting themselves, such as extreme weather and climate events, and disruption to infrastructure and agriculture. By 2030, the Clean Power Plan, which that includes both the June proposal for states and then the supplemental proposal, would achieve reductions in CO2 emissions from the power sector of approximately 30% from 2005 levels, and would also have the benefit of reducing emissions of other pollutants such as SO2, NOx, and PM2.5 from the electric power energy. And our projections are that in 2030, the reductions from the Clean Power Plan, which again, including both the June proposal and then the supplemental proposal, would result in climate and net climate and health benefits of $48 billion to $82 billion. So the next slide just provides a general overview of the supplemental proposal. It sets an interim and a final goal for affected EGUs in each area to reduce carbon pollution. The supplemental proposal does not prescribe the specific measures that these areas would need to use to meet the goal. The approach that we're taking would give areas the flexibility to choose how they want to meet that goal and what they want to put into their plan for meeting the goal. So some of the flexibilities that would give them include an option to translate their rate-based goal to a mass equivalent. They can choose what would work best in their area, tailoring it to their needs or policy objectives. This would give them the opportunity to build on existing programs. They can also avail themselves of the option to work with other areas through a multi-jurisdictional plan, and they would be able to fit this into their existing planning process for the utility sector. So Gina already touched on this a little bit, but the power plants that are affected by the supplemental proposal, there are four in Indian Country, two that are on Navajo lands, one that's on Fort Mojave lands, and then one that's on Ute lands. And then for the U.S. territories, there are six affected power plants in Puerto Rico and two that are in Guam. We identified two potentially affected EGUs in the Virgin Islands. However, our information is that they're not currently in operation and they have not operated for several years, so we're not proposing a goal for the Virgin Islands. And then we did not identify any affected EGUs in American Samoa or the Northern Mariana Islands, so we're also not proposing a goal for those territories. So in order to set the goal for each of the areas, the first step was to determine the best system of emission reduction. And because of the way the power sector is structured, we determined that a set of four types of measures, which we call building blocks, would be the best system to reduce carbon pollution from fossil fuel fired power plants. So there's four building blocks. The first one is measures to make coal plants more efficient. The second is increased use of high efficiency natural gas combined cycle units. The third is generating electricity from low or zero emitting facilities. And then the fourth is demand side energy efficiency. If you want, there's a more extensive discussion of the BSER and the four building blocks in the June proposal. We did not repeat that in the supplemental, so you would need to refer back to the June proposal for the extensive discussion. So after we made that determination of the BSER, the system of emission reduction, we set the goals based on the application of the BSER to each area. Okay, the next slide presents the proposed goals for the territories. And the goals are in the form of an adjusted output weighted average pounds of CO2 per net megawatt hour. The interim goal, that would apply during the 2020 to 2029 period on a cumulative or average basis. And then the final goal represents the level achievable by 2030. Some things to note about the goals for territories. Because Guam doesn't have any coal-fired units, there are no adjustments from building block one for Guam. For building block two, and also for building block two, and then for Puerto Rico, we're asking for comment on the potential for sufficient liquefied natural gas capacity in Puerto Rico for building block two. For building block three, we're co-proposing two options for the application of building block three. So that, where you see there in the table, you see the approach A and approach B. Those are the two different options that we're co-proposing. And then we're also taking comment on an alternative approach. So the far right columns you see, those are the goals using the alternative approach. And the reason that we have these different options for building block three, the approach that we use for states for building block three builds on the 2012 utility scale non-hydro renewable energy. But available information shows that that is zero for the areas of Indian Country and territories. So if we use the approach that's consistent with what we use for states, there would be zero adjustment to the goal from building block three. So we're taking comment on using this adjusted approach, which is the approach B identified there which would result in a positive amount of renewable energy for Building Block 3. And then also, as we did for states, we're taking comment on an alternative approach, which uses technical potential for renewable energy. For Building Block 4, we're requesting comments specifically on the projected retail electricity sales growth for the territories. We don't have data there that's the same as what we had for the state, so we're requesting comment on the data that we did use for the territories. Okay, the next slide shows the proposed goals for areas of Indian Country. And again, here, using the approach for Building Block 3 that we did for states doesn't result in any adjustment to the goal for Building Block 3. So we're taking comment on using a different approach for Building Block 3. You'll see that there are no adjustments from Building Block 1 for the Fort Mojave lands because they don't have a coal-fired unit. And then there's no adjustments from Building Block 2 because there are no natural gas combined cycle units for redispatch in the areas of Indian Country. For Building Block 4, tribes raised concerns about the applicability of Building Block 4 because they have a need to increase access to electricity, and they indicated that the goal should account for this need. So the methodology that we used assumes future growth in sales with the goal of ensuring that it's accomplished efficiently. And we were requesting comment on the sales growth that we used in the goal calculations. So that gives you an overview of the proposed goals for territories in Indian Country. I wanted to note that we're also taking comment on a second set of goals for the territories in Indian Country that reflect less stringent application of the building blocks and a shorter implementation period. We do have a technical support document available on our website that documents all the data sources that we used and how the goal calculations were done. So, for more detailed information about the goal calculations, you can refer to that technical support document. So as I mentioned, the first element of the supplemental proposal was establishing the goals. The second element is the implementation plan. So here are some general guidelines. For areas of Indian Country that have affected EGUs, tribes may seek the authority to implement 111D plans, but they're not required to do so. If the tribes do want to seek that authority and obtain it, then our expectation is that they'll have the same flexibility that states and territories do in choosing how to meet their proposed goals. Pursuant to the tribal authority rule, if the tribes do not seek and obtain the authority to establish a plan, EPA will promulgate such federal plan provisions as are necessary or appropriate. In the supplemental proposal, we're not proposing a determination regarding any tribe's eligibility to develop a plan or whether a federal plan is necessary or appropriate. So that's the guide, you know, it's kind of the process for tribes. For territories, what we're proposing is that they'll have the same guidelines and timing for implementation plans that we propose for the states. And I'll talk about those in a little bit more detail in the next couple of slides. Also in the supplemental proposal, we're taking comment on whether state or multi-jurisdictional plans, and by jurisdictional meaning state, tribe, or territory, whether those plans could include demand-side energy efficiency, renewable energy, and new units that are located in areas without affected EGUs. This is something we've been hearing from several stakeholders, that there's an interest in that, so we're asking for comment on whether the plans could include those areas that do not have affected EGUs. So just to give a little bit more detail about the timing for implementation plans and the requirements, in terms of the timing, initial or complete plans have to be submitted by June 30th, 2016, and we are providing the option to use a two-step process for the final plans if more time is needed. So for individual plans, a one-year extension could be requested. For multi-jurisdictional plans, and again, jurisdiction meaning state, tribe, or territory, they would be eligible for a two-year extension to June 30th, 2018, although they'd need to submit a progress report by June 30th, 2017. If a jurisdiction does need more time to submit a complete plan, they'll have to make an initial submittal by June 30th, 2016 in lieu of a complete plan. Once a plan is submitted, once a complete plan is submitted, EPA will review the plan and make a determination within 12 months to approve or disapprove the plan. And that determination will be made through a notice and comment rulemaking process. So the next slide lays out the 12 required plan components. And I won't read all of these, but they include things like identification of affected entities, demonstration that the plan will achieve the performance level, the milestones, corrective measures, monitoring, record keeping, and reporting requirements, description of that reporting, and then certification of a hearing on the plan. So once the plans are submitted, EPA will evaluate the sufficiency, sufficiency of each plan based on whether the plan addresses the 12 components and on four general criteria. And those would be that the plan contains enforceable measures that reduce CO2 emissions from affected EGUs, that the measures are projected to achieve emission performance equivalent to or better than the goal and a timeline that's equivalent to that in the emission guidelines. The EGU CO2 performance under the plan must be quantifiable and verifiable. And then the plan has to include a process for reporting of plan implementation, emission performance outcomes, and implementation of corrective measures. We have developed what we call the Clean Power Plan Toolbox. So it's a website. And the goal of the website is to provide streamlined information to assist states, tribes, and territories with plan development and submittal. So currently on the website, there's a link to the proposal and also any technical support documents, federal resources that are available, and then current state, tribal, and territory policies and programs. After we finalize the rule, we'll be putting in additional information, such as a checklist and any tools to help stakeholders assist in implementation. And as it says here on the slide, this will definitely be a dynamic resource that we'll be updating periodically, and we're asking for input on any information that would be helpful to states, tribes, and territories in developing their plans. And there's a way that you can provide comments on that website. So that kind of gives you an overview of the goals and then the process for implementation plans. The next slide provides a summary of the impacts of the supplemental proposal. For Indian Country, we estimate that there would be no additional costs, reductions, or benefits. For the goal for the Navajo Nation, if that goal is converted to a mask-based equivalent, we expect that that goal could be met without any additional actions beyond shutdowns that have already occurred at the Four Corners plant and that are expected to occur at Navajo Generating Station due to the regional haze regulations. And then for the goal for the Ute in Fort Mojave, the costs, reductions, and benefits for achieving that goal were already accounted for in the June proposal, so there are no additional impacts in the supplemental proposal. For the territories, our estimate is that there would be a cost savings of $350 million in 2030, which includes reduced fuel expenditures from energy efficiency programs and redispatch. We estimate CO2 reductions of 3.1 million tons in 2030, and then there would also be reductions of SO2, NOx, and PM2.5. The monetized climate benefits in 2030 are $170 million, and then the net benefits in 2030 are $520 million. We were not able to quantify the health code benefits in the territories because the benefit per ton values that we used in the June proposal are only appropriate for the continental U.S. So the last slide here addresses the public input. So as Janet mentioned, prior to the proposal, we met with stakeholders in Puerto Rico and Guam, and we also held consultations with the three tribes that have affected power plants on their lands, plus the others who requested consultation. And you'll see that input reflected in the supplemental proposal. We're planning to have a public hearing on November 19th in Phoenix, Arizona. You can find more information in an online registration form at the link provided there. The last day to pre-register is November 14th, but we'll certainly take requests on the day of the hearing to speak. And then the public comment period goes through December 19th, and
when you submit your public comment, please make sure to identify the docket number. And there's instructions for submitting comments in the Federal Register notice and also on our website. And there's you can use multiple ways. You can submit it directly through the regulations.gov website. You can email them, fax them. You can mail a hard copy. So there's multiple ways that you can submit comments. So I think that's all I had for, and I think we're going to turn it back and take some questions.
So we have a question here. I'm going to go ahead and read it. It is from Benjamin Cohen, and the question is, on page 67 of the supplement, there's a discussion of including Canadian renewable energy imports in meeting a state's goal. Does that mean that Canadian hydropower imports could be counted in compliance while New York's own hydro resources are not included in goal setting for compliance?
Thanks, Ben. This is William Niebling from the Office of Air and Radiation, and I'll just point out that what we're doing in this supplemental proposal really is just soliciting comment on all of the ways in which we could consider international renewable energy. So the specific language is the EPA soliciting comment on all aspects of the treatment of RE, demand-side energy efficiency, and other new low or non-emitting electricity generation across international boundaries, et cetera. So we're not actually proposing to have it count one way or another. I'll also note that there's a there is a difference between new and incremental hydro and existing hydropower, and you see that reflected in the June 2nd proposal. Thank you.
Great, thanks. We have another question here from Bethany Fisher. It is, if a tribe seeks and obtains authority to implement a 111D plan, will it be subject to the same June 30th, 2016 timeline for plan submittal, or will it have more time to submit its plan? And I believe that Laura McKelvey is going to answer this question.
Yeah, this is Laura. The tribal authority rule identifies meeting this Clean Air Act schedules as one of the places that we will not treat tribes in a manner similar to states. So the tribes have some flexibility on those deadlines. However, we have to meet the requirements, and so it may push us into determining whether it's necessary or appropriate to keep that area in compliance with the Clean Air Act. So we will work with the tribe to make sure that any provisions that are needed to implement the rule, they'll not interfere with any other area.
Great. Thanks, Laura. If you have any questions, you can type them in on your screen. We don't have any other questions right now, but we'll wait here for a minute or two and see if anyone else has questions. Okay, we have another question here from Chow Nguyen. It's, if Navajo Nation will meet the proposed goal through what it has or will do, do we need to submit a plan?
Thanks, Chow. This is William Niebling from the Office of Air Radiation again. That's a good question. We're inviting comment on all of the aspects in which tribes all the ways in which tribes could comply with this rule, and that's certainly a question that we welcome comment on. There's a number of layers in that, depending upon whether the Navajo Nation seeks and obtains treatment in the manner of state or not. So that's a question probably to be fully answered at a later date, but we definitely welcome fulsome comments on that point.
Okay, so the next question we have is from Gregory Jones, and it is a tribal plan required to convert to a mass-based rate?
This is William again. The answer is no. The rate is the means of compliance, but tribes like other jurisdictions could have the option of converting to a mass-based compliance mechanism if they so chose.
So we're still waiting for more questions. We don't have any questions in the queue right now, but we'll wait for another minute. Okay, we have another question here from Chao Nguyen. It's any more information you can give us on how to convert to a mass-based system?
This is Reed Harvey in the Office of Air and Radiation. We've received this question broadly from a number of states and other jurisdictions. We provided information in the June proposal about one way to do this in a technical support document, and we've also said publicly that we will very soon release additional information that would illustrate other ways of converting from the rate-based goals to mass equivalents. And so if you'll stay tuned, you'll see that from us soon.
Okay, we have a question here from Christina Gonzalez-Maddox. It is, with the previous rule, EPA offered a comment guide that detailed the rule elements for which EPA was requesting comment. Will a similar guide be provided for this supplemental proposal? And I believe Melanie King is going to take this question.
Yeah, yes, we are planning to provide a very similar document, and we will post that on the website shortly.
Okay, we have a question here from Benjamin Cohen. It is, for states that choose a mass-based approach, it is still required to do the EE, EM&V, or is the measurement of CO2 stack emissions sufficient to show compliance under an approved state plan? And Reed Harvey is going to take this question.
This is a good question. I guess what I'm going to suggest, Ben, is that we have committed to a separate call when we provide more information on our mass-based approach. And if we can defer taking that, I think it'd be benefit other people also who would want to be part of that conversation. So I'm going to ask that we queue that up when we get to that next topic.
All right, well, we don't have any more questions at this time, so we're going to go ahead and end the webinar. But thank you very much for joining us, and we will have a recording of this webinar posted on our website in the next 2 weeks.